Today is October 20th, 2015. This is the regular meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Welcome to everyone. Remember, if you have cell phones or other electronic devices, please silence them. That includes legislators. If there's an emergency, we have an exit to my right in the back, an exit to my left in the front. Please don't use the elevator in case of a fire. I wonder if you'd stand with me, please, and pledge allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Ask for the roll call of members, please.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
I'm here.
We have 11 members present.
That's a quorum. That's more than a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. We have a proclamation, but the person who's going to receive it is delayed, so we're going to hold that off for a little while until later in the agenda. Special order of the day is that I'm going to call on Carol Booth, who is a member of our mental health or County Mental Health Services Board, who has requested permission to speak to us for approximately 5 minutes. Carol, you're welcome to sit at the microphone, or you can sit at the very end of the table, whichever is more comfortable for you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Does that need to come down?
Down.
This doesn't count for the 5 minutes, okay? Okay.
Can you hear me now? Thank you. Yes. As you have heard, my name is Carol Booth, and I am here on behalf of the majority of the members of the Tompkins County Community Mental Health Services Board regarding the proposed merger of the Mental Health Department of our county with the Public Health Department of our county. I think a letter went out recently that you all have copies of. If not, they're up in the front somewhere. I just want to say something about myself. I've been a mental health board member for 16-plus years. I was chair of the mental health board, and I feel that I've really participated quite a bit. I have been on the Developmental Disabilities Subcommittee for probably, I'm not on it now, but I was on it for 13 to 14 years. I was the chair of that committee for most of that time. I have been in leadership roles both with the local NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness of the Finger Lakes, so locally, and I've been on the state board of NAMI also. I have recently retired from Racker Centers a year ago as an early intervention special ed itinerant teacher, working with children with developmental disabilities and emotional disabilities. And my point of all this is that I have spent most of my adult life in the field of disability. I have both professional and personal experience in this, and I'm an intense advocate for the best for individuals with disabilities. I also want to say about our board, many of you may not know that much about our board, but the Tompkins County Community Mental Health Services Board is a statutory board. Every county in the state has one. We have 15 members from representing many different disciplines, law enforcement, medicine, education, social work, family members, recipients of services. We also, under the board, have three statutory subcommittees, developmental disabilities, mental health, and substance abuse, who report to the board. We have great responsibility for the most vulnerable people in our community. And we have one agenda, basically. We strive to maintain the highest quality of continuum of care for individuals in our community with developmental disabilities, substance abuse, and mental illness. I would like to say that in terms of this proposal, we look forward to opportunities to collaborate in any way we can with agencies in our county. We are not against collaboration at all. We see possibilities in the future for collaborating. But my main point here tonight is to say that the majority of the board, Mental Health Services Board, is highly troubled by the process of determining this proposal, along with the position the proposal is to be for. We have a lot of trouble with this. In fact, most of us, we may feel slightly differently in terms of, well, we might want to think about merger, we might not, we might want to stay where we are. The whole board is very concerned about the process. It has not been a good one. The time frame has been very, very short. I think we heard about this our board meeting in early July, and now we're here in mid to late October. It's a very short time frame. The other problem that we all as board members feel is that from the beginning, this proposal has been tied to one person. That is a very unusual way to go ahead and take action and appoint someone to a job. We feel very strongly that the proposal needs to be separated from the person. Very strongly about it. We want you all to think about slowing down and correcting course. Now, yesterday I heard on the news that law enforcement committee of this legislature voted 4-0 to do a study on consolidation of the county and city police departments. Now, I'm sure there are differences in those departments, and I think there should be a study, but there's a lot more in common than there is between the public health department and the mental health services department. Mental health services are very individualized, intricate, complicated, and direct services, and they're intense for both the individuals receiving services as well as the staff who are providing those services. So I think the public health department has some direct services also. I've worked with some of those people in early intervention. They're wonderful. But on the whole, the public health department seems to, you know, their mission is to come up with policies to prevent contagions and illnesses spreading through the community, various things like this, inspecting restaurants. It's all very important, but they're very, very different departments. So what I'd like to leave you with is this. We would like to really begin a process of looking at what the options are. We've had 4 very difficult years in the mental health department, very difficult years, very challenging. And this has affected the individuals seeking services, believe me, it has. So we would like to start a process, put together a committee of a variety of community stakeholders to investigate and come up with some options. Now, the Dutchess County health department is merging with the mental health department there. They hired an outside consultant. They've spent over 2 years doing this, and they have made a decision. They looked at it, status quo, should we stay the way we are, keep the structure we have? Should we merge administratively, as has been proposed here, or should we merge entire departments? They are going with merging entire departments. Fine. They did the study. They came up with that decision. We would like to be able to investigate in a similar way and come up with options that help us understand what is best for the short-term and the long-term needs of our community. The other thing about Dutchess County, which makes it somewhat different from us, they've had a commissioner there for 35 years. They haven't had the turmoil we've had. I really, truly believe we need to stop and begin a process that's reasonable, transparent, and appropriate to this. Now, in the meantime, there are some suggestions that we've made while that might be happening. because obviously we need to do some things to help support the mental health department. So our recommendations would be we'd like to continue with Frank Krupa as our interim temporary commissioner. As far as I can tell, he's done a lot to stabilize things, and I appreciate very much the fact that he's done that. We needed it desperately. So I'd like to have him continue, hire an administrative assistant for Frank, maybe housed in the mental health department as soon as possible, recruit and hire a deputy mental health commissioner. We talked about this at meetings of our board 3 months ago, and we were under the impression that this was going to start. And I don't believe anything has started. We need someone as a deputy commissioner who is very strong, has excellent background in disability, leadership, and communication. And we all feel that that's very important. In the meantime, we'd like to, again, as I said, see how things, what options come out of such a study, investigation, how it affects our community. One of those options, it's possible, could be status quo, which means we might want to start open a search for commissioner again. Some people feel that that's a possible option. One might involve searching, even with a merged administrative situation, searching widely for a person to fill that position. So I guess I'm asking you to please slow down. Think about the fact that this process has not been a good one. These are the most vulnerable people. We owe them the best, most justified decision possible. And we need to get it right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol. And please express our thanks to all the members of your board for their continuing service to our county and the vulnerable population they serve.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
And we all have the letter that...
Yes, if anyone needs another copy, there is a
copy. We'll be taking a look at that.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Carol, did you need to say something?
Well, I was just going to ask that to the extent that... First, I want to make sure that everybody had received the letter, and second, to the extent that any of your remarks contain material that weren't in the letter, if it might make sense for you to forward a copy of your remarks.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for listening.
I think I can do the proclamation now. We have Gay Nickel. I'm sorry. Yes, we'll come to privilege of the floor right after this, and we'll call on you. Thank you. We have a proclamation this evening, and I'm going to read it. Whereas Tompkins County and the City of Ithaca are leaders in the clean energy transition and are working to achieve their shared climate goal of 80% emission reductions by 2050, and whereas energy conservation and efficiency are the most important steps we can take to reduce our consumption of fossil fuels, and local offsets are an easy and affordable step we can each take to compensate for carbon emissions we cannot eliminate. And whereas local carbon offsets through the Finger Lakes Climate Fund are an affordable means to fund energy-efficient projects that would not otherwise be possible in lower-income households, increasing their comfort and security, providing local jobs, and reducing fossil fuel emissions. And whereas safe, comfortable, and affordable housing should be available to all residents of Tompkins County, and whereas the Climate Fund has awarded 13 grants totaling $27,769 and offset over 1,400 tons of local emissions, and typically these matching grants leverage about five times more investment in energy improvements by filling the gap in financing, and whereas we believe it is essential to ensure everyone in our community is able to make the transition to clean energy future and seal the cracks is a community-wide campaign to raise funds to help lower-income households reduce their fossil fuel dependency. Now, therefore, I, Michael Lane, Chair of the County Legislature, do proclaim Saturday, October 24th, 2015, and Friday, October 30th, as Seal the Cracks Climate Offset Week in Tompkins County. Between those dates, I should say. And we think this is a pretty important thing, and I think we have Gay Nicholson here to receive this proclamation and maybe share a word with us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much.
want to express my gratitude to the county for joining in with the city and the town of Ithaca in this proclamation for this Local Carbon Offset Week. We are proud to say that we've reached about two-thirds of our goal so far, of raising $10,000 to help more families in need in our community. And we are hoping that the community will respond and help carry us over that finish line by October 30th. It's been great to get this widespread support thus far from some of our, leading businesses like Renovus, Halco, Zero Draft. They've been champion offsetters, but lots of other businesses not involved in clean energy are participating as well as some of our local wonderful nonprofits like Science Center, Kitchen Theater, Cooperative Extension. They've all been involved along with a number of individuals, including Mayor Myrek, who offset his flight to Geneva, Switzerland from this fall, and Martha Robertson, who just offset flights to Zambia and where was the other place?
Two flights to Zambia.
Yeah.
And back.
Yes. And so we appreciate all of that. We believe the program is deserving of all of our support because we do have an affordable housing crisis, and energy bills are part of what makes a house affordable. And reducing those energy bills, especially for our modest income households, is a piece of solving this overall issue. So with me tonight is Linda Kottman, who is one of the awardees from our Finger Lakes Climate Fund grants, and she's here to share with you her perspective on this program and what it's meant to her and her family. Come on up, Linda.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. My name is Linda Kottman. Aloha. I'm actually from Hawaii Island. Moved here, about 4 years ago. And I bought a house that was really big and very energy inefficient. I'm a single mom. I have three kids, one of whom is quite ill. And I had no idea about heat bills. And so when I got my first January heat bill, it was $2,000, and I didn't know how I could afford to stay in the house. So I got an energy audit through, Snug Planet, and they offered me a NYSERDA grant, and I was still unable to afford to buy a new furnace, which I guess it was about $10,000. So the Finger Lakes Climate Fund, I'm eternally grateful to them because they provided a grant, and then I was able to get a no-interest loan balance. That new furnace has brought my bill down to about $400 in January, so it's an enormous savings. It's allowed my family to stay in our home, and so I really support this program. It was the bridge that I needed to, afford to live here in the winter. So thank you to everyone who offsets their travel. Thank you to Gay and to this county for being so supportive of these energy efficiency measures. And thank you.
Thanks for coming. To go to privilege of the floor next, but after that I'm going to ask for a couple of resolutions to come forward. We have folks waiting for them tonight, and then we'll go to our topical presentation after that. So we'll move to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity the public has to come to speak to us for up to 3 minutes. If you want to speak to us and haven't already signed a blue card, I only have one so far, please sign the blue card and send it up. At the end of your 3 minutes, the countdown will be on the screen. There'll be an audible signal which will tell you the time is up. In agreeing to speak tonight, you agree to the 3-minute time limit. You agree not to raise your voice. You agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. And after 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. And you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. The card I have tonight is from Sophie Zapala. Please.
Dear Tompkins legislators, Ithaca resident and beyond, my name is Sophie Zapala, and I'm here to let you know of a newly established film series called Olive Branch Film Series, Ithaca Explores Palestine Through Films. The series brings cinema by, from, and about Palestine to our local community. Featuring both narrative films and documentaries, we aim to promote exploration and discussion of the complex human, political, historical, and cultural realities of Palestinians. As an entity, we are independent of any local political organization or ethnic community. Our fall 2015 season lineup consists of five remarkable films we picked with great care to provide a good mix of content and formats. We show our movies at Cinemapolis every 3 weeks on Wednesdays at 7:15 p.m. Regular Cinemapolis ticket prices apply. We have already shown two of our movies with great success, The Wanted 18, co-directed by Palestinian Amer Shomali and Canadian Paul Cohen, and Wedding in Galilee by the Palestinian director Michael Claffey. Next Wednesday, October 28, we will be showing an award-winning documentary, Jaffa, The Orange's Clockwork, by the Israeli-born director Eyal Sivan, about rebranding of the famous Jaffa orange, once a symbol of sunny Palestine, into a symbol of Zionism and Israel. This screening is a rare opportunity to see this particular film, made possible by director and his special permission. We encourage Ithacans to take advantage of the showing and join us for the unscripted and at-will discussion and on sharing of reflection after the movie. On November 18, we will show Private, a thriller that will keep the viewers on the edge of their seats until the very last second, by the Italian director Saverio Costanzo. And on December 9, we will finish the season with The Inner Tour, a thought-provoking documentary by the Israeli director Ranan Alexandrovich and the Palestinian producer Raed Andoni. As soon as our fall 2015 season ends, we will begin work on previewing and selecting the movies for the spring 2016 lineup. We are a very small group of volunteers who have put a lot of work to organize the series and have very limited financial means to market the events. We ask for your help with spreading the word about the series and upcoming films. Better yet, please come and see our films. Bring your family, friends, and neighbors. Please know that children under 12 may not be able to fully grasp the complex documentary the Jaffa film is. Also, all movies this season have English subtitles, so please do not forget about your glasses. For more information on the Olive Branch Film Series, please go to our website, www.olivebranchfilmsithaca.net, or like us on Facebook. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for speaking to us, Ms. Zapala. Again, if there's anyone else, I don't have any other blue cards, so I guess we'll proceed. I'm not seeing a municipal official who might be here to speak, unless I'm missing someone. We'll go to privilege of the floor for legislators. Anyone want to speak? Martha Robertson, then Carol Chock.
First, I'm sorry that Carol Booth has left. I wanted to make sure that I'm sure she knows that we're not in any way talking about the merger of two departments. And when she said we want to see if mental health can stay where it is, it's not. There's no contemplation of it actually moving, so the public needs to understand that. The only proposal is about leadership at one position at the top, a shared commissioner and shared director. So there's no conversation at all about merger of public health and mental health departments. On the theme of energy, I've got a couple of meetings to tell people about. I've got to read my calendar because there's so many of them. The county's planning committee will be unveiling the energy roadmap that they've been working on. Were you going to talk about this, Dooley?
Yeah, but you're fine.
Go ahead. Well, I've got a whole theme here, so At the public library at the Borg Warner Room. It's Wednesday. That's tomorrow, the 21st, 5:30 to 7:30 or 8. It's 5:30 to 8. Okay, the Energy Roadmap. I believe there will be a presentation, but also a chance to see things at different tables and make comments.
Presentation is at 5:45.
Okay, there you go. On Thursday the 29th at 5:30, and this is at the Science Center, there's a public meeting of the Energy and Environmental Energy and Economic Development Task Force, public meeting seeking input from folks, again, 5:30 to 7:30 on October 29th. And on, let me get this one up, on Wednesday the 28th, Green Hub, it's a business sort of green organizations that and businesses that get together. Green Resource Hub of the Finger Lakes presents a very interesting panel discussion. That's Wednesday, October 28th. It's 6 o'clock to 7:30. The Evolving Energy Paradigm, Local Business Issues and Impacts, about the smart grid, energy decentralization, et cetera. That's going to be at Renovus Solar. Again, October 28th, 6 o'clock, 1520 Trumansburg Road. So I don't think anybody better say that they're bored in this town. There's just too much to do. So I thought that was, this is all part of Carbon Offset Week, I suppose. And sorry if I stole your thunder, Dooley, but you can add to that, I'm sure. Thanks.
I would certainly think that if we're not all energized after all of those meetings, I don't know what it'll take. Carol Chalk.
Yeah, well, Martha stole some of the thunder of what I was going to say. I'll just point out that the tomorrow night's presentation is the Energy Roadmap Steering Committee's work, led by our esteemed planning department, in which we looked intensively, quite intensively, with a consultant at different sources of energy that are using technologies that are viable today, not pie in the sky for the future, and what's a reasonable mix of energy that we could be going for realistically in the next number of years. And it's quite interesting, and it's now down to having to pick among those scenarios what's the most realistic and doable. So it should be quite an interesting presentation and an opportunity to weigh in on where you think we ought to go. I've been looking for, given all the activity that goes on in this town related to energy, I've been looking for an opportunity, and I haven't had quite the right one, to just point out, you know, that we have this big case pending in front of the Public Service Commission, and I'm not sure that people are vaguely aware. There have been some articles that the Cayuga Operating Company is being purchased by another company. And I just wanted to give people some additional information about that. It is described in the paperwork as being purchased by Riesling Power. This is an LLC that was created in June of 2015. It's an interesting choice of a name for a company in the Riesling-rich Finger Lakes, given that it itself is a subsidiary of Bicent Power, which is a subsidiary of GSO, which is affiliated with the Cheniere Energy Group, which itself is the credit-owned business of the Blackstone Group. And, I will just suggest again, with all of this incredible energy, so to speak, no pun intended, and activity going on in our town about what's doable, I'll suggest again that this community has the potential. We do. We have the potential. We can work together. We could sit down together in search of a more local, creative, sustainable solution using transparent process that could transition our own communities and our own labor force to a truly sustainable, economically viable future. And that could serve the goals of our existing energy plans and those we're actively engaged in creating. All it would take is the will to sit down together and hash it out. It's doable. There are companies out there. There are technologies out there. And it's just, I'd like to see us figure out a way to do that, especially given this new development. So I will.
Anyone else like to speak?
You've got access to my contact information, anybody who'd like to pursue it.
Julie Kiefer.
If you want more energy information, the newest National Geographic has its climate issue, and it's worth looking at. But that's not why I raised my hand. on a completely different note, today is October 20th, and I think it was October 20th was the day in Back to the Future, which was the Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd movie. October 20th was the day that they were going to return, and the Cubs were going to be in the World Series.
Get it, Dooley.
And we're missing it.
I think it's 2-0, isn't it?
Shh.
Will, Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. One more energy-related comment. And I'm going to try to channel our former colleague, Frank Proto, who regularly gave consumer alerts. This one is actually based on a personal experience. Several weeks ago, on a Saturday afternoon, just sitting in my living room, got a call from a woman who said that she was from NYSEG ESCO, whatever that is. But I heard the word NYSEG, and I thought it was from the NYSEG energy folks. And she was trying to make me aware that I was eligible for a significant discount, that all I had to do is give her some information that she did not have and to process this. And I asked her, are you trying to get me to change my energy company or provider? And she said, no. You're just eligible for this discount. And she had me find my energy bill and give her the series of numbers that were on that. My wife was in the other room, and she was vaguely overhearing it. But when she heard what I had done, she came out. And the words she used to describe the action were not pretty. Essentially, you idiot. It's like, don't you know not to respond to random calls from outside asking for information? And that's something I thought I knew. But apparently this was a new twist. And I mentioned this just so that folks here and anybody who might be viewing are aware that there are businesses out there. This one turned out, I think, was based in Tucson, Arizona, when we looked at the area code, that are trying to get people to randomly switch their energy providers. I'm not too sure quite how the scam works, but we were able to stop by calling NYSEG and essentially freezing our account. So. And that is my announcement.
Thank you, Will. Peter Stein.
Boy, I can beat that. We get those calls, I don't know, it seems like once a week or twice a week. And my wife, Irene, answers the phone more often than I do, and she says, oh, my husband does it, makes all those decisions, sorry. And with times I get it, I say, my wife, she's the one that makes those decisions, or we hang up.
Anyone else? Okay, let's move on. Request for a couple of resolutions as we move forward. Dave McKenna, I wondered if you might move out of your committee resolution E, buildings and infrastructure.
Very well. Award of bid, Tompkins County Mental Health Building Addition and Alterations Project, ID 5901, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion. There is a revised as adopted version of this in your packet, and Dave, I assume that's
the one
you're moving,
moved,
right?
Yes.
Okay. Leslin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One, I was going to mention to revise, but ordinarily in our packet there's information about number of bids received and perhaps who those other bidders are. I didn't see any information on that. I wonder if it's possible to get there. Then I have a few other questions.
Can someone speak to that?
No.
For Leslin, I see Alan's here. Alan Lockett from
Facilities. I've seen the revised. We have five.
Well,
I see
the rest of us don't have the revised.
Oh, it's not in your packet?
Not in my packet.
It's
way.
Behind.
You go. Just look.
Your red folder, rather.
Was the question about the number of bids received?
Yes, please.
We had five bids total. They were all pretty close together, which generally reflects a good set of design documents. Some of them were from contractors we worked with before, and the lowest responsible bid was from Streeter Associates, who we're currently working with now doing the masonry project.
Were any of those bids, I know when we say local, we go within that region, but when I'm saying local now, I'm talking within Tompkins County. Were there any general contractors out of Tompkins County?
There was at least, I have Gary Myers with me from Holt Architects. I recall one local bidder, McPherson Associates. Streeter, I believe, is from Elmira. Welliver is from Watkins Glen. And I don't recall the other ones. Okay.
That's fine. May I also ask, and perhaps this is a question for you, I didn't see the RFP because I'm not sitting on F&I, but aside from prevailing wages, were there any other special parameters or requirements that were included in the bid? I mean, we've talked about living wage, we've talked about hiring local. We have talked about it, but not necessarily included. Were there any other special parameters?
Right. This is a public works bid, so it was prevailing wages were in. I don't think there's any other conditions that went along with this.
I don't think
it's
so.
It's below $1 million, so Wick's Law and,
right.
and apprenticeships don't apply.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Martha?
Alan, did you say Streeter Associates?
That's correct.
Okay, the resolution just says street, so we should.
Street or Streeter?
Streeter. With an ER.
ER.
With an ER, okay.
Make sure to get that spelled right.
All right, and I think this is really a good project, you know, to really enhance the entrance of the building and it's to improve security, but at the same time making it more welcoming. So thanks very much and good luck.
We're looking forward to completing.
Leslin had another question.
Yeah, I have just one other quick question. So what we looked at under the capital improvements for this building, this is the entire thing in its entirety, and this bid is within what we appropriated?
It is. So I think the total, including soft costs, the amount, was it $575 that we had put into the capital plan? And so even with soft costs, we are right on the nose.
Thank you.
Julie?
It's awarding the bid with alternate two. What was alternate one?
Sunscreens, right.
Huh?
There are window screens to keep the sun from coming in those large windows that face the creek.
Why was that not included?
So the price was too high, actually.
Would it have changed who the low bidder was?
No.
So that seems like, in terms of our theme of energy tonight, that's an important thing to have.
Yeah, we're actually going back to the contractor and asking them to look at their price to just do the first floor windows. And there were more windows involved than that in the original project. So we're asking them to look at that, give us a price, and hold that price for 90 days. So we may actually award part of that.
Well, that would be great, and Dave will tell us if that happens. Thanks.
Carol?
It refreshed my memory as to whether this is going to change the outside footprint of the building.
No.
We've talked over the years about doing something to memorialize Bob DeLuca. We've talked about, you know, something simple, like a bench and a couple of bushes sitting outside there in the grassy area. Is it possible? Is it too late? Or, you know, if there's any money left over at the end to add that modest?
That would be wonderful.
Sounds like a discussion that ought to go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
I'm not on that committee. Will you maybe take that up if it's something that could be incorporated into the project?
Yeah, I can do that.
I'd like to second that.
So you see some interest there, Dave.
Very good.
Anything else on the resolution to approve?
Mr. Chair, I don't have anything on the resolution. Perhaps everybody knows who, I know the gentleman speaking face, but I don't know who he is.
Alan Lockett.
Who? Alan.
Alan, introduce yourself.
I'm the Assistant Director of Facilities.
Alan, use the microphone.
Thank you, Alan.
Alan works with
Arel
Lamaro. All right, are you ready to vote, folks? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Thank you.
Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Alan, thank you.
Thank you.
The other resolution we've been asked to move up is out of budget, and that is the budget. Jim, would you be willing to move Resolution E?
Sure.
I'm sorry, Resolution D. Excuse me.
Yes, it's D. It is the adoption of the amendments to the 2016 tentative Tompkins County budget and 2016-2020 capital program. I would move that, and I will tell you what the numbers are when we get it on the floor.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion.
The total tax levy number is 46, and I believe everyone has a sheet on their desk. $46,713,731 in an approximate tax levy increase of 1.12% and a countywide average tax rate decrease of 0.01%. Resolving further that the increase is $13.62 on a median priced home assessed at $170,000. Anyone listening or adding, you have $13 on 170K assessed house.
Carol Chalk.
I'm sorry. The sheet that I have in front of me says an average tax rate decrease that was different from what you – can you just repeat? 1.77 is what it's listed here. Is that – did I mishear?
The sheet that I have says 1.12 on it, right?
That's the levy increase.
Oh, the tax rate are you talking about?
The decrease.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it's a change of 0.01. It goes from 686 in the recommended, no, the 215 to 673 in the amended budget. Is it? I didn't read those numbers.
Jim, you're looking at, that's a change from the administrator's budget. The resolution, Carol, you're looking at the number in the resolution.
The number in the resolution.
The decrease.
So it's an
in the
average
resolution.
Tax rate decrease of 1.77%.
Okay. Who could speak to this?
Where is
Joe?
That?
Joe, will you get us on track, please?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Joe. Again, it's one of those happy moments. Everybody's right. Jim talked about a drop of 0.12. That's actually a 12-cent per thousand decrease in the tax rate between 2015 and 2016. That converts to a percentage reduction in the tax rate of 1.77%. So those are the two numbers we were talking about on rates.
That number is nowhere on this sheet.
Correct. Right.
Right.
So can you explain to us how... I mean, I understand this, I think, but just for our viewing audience at home, how we have a tax levy increase, but a tax rate decrease.
Simply, it's probably new wood. Higher assessment. There is no more to say than that. New wood, higher assessment.
New buildings that have been
new
built.
New buildings.
And we get new assessment on it.
What else do you want?
Okay. So people can expect to see their – but on the other hand, people are not expecting to see their tax bill go down. It's typical house, median-priced house of $170,000 will see an increase of a whopping $13.62.
It will all depend on what happens with the assessment on their home. So what we're trying to show, we're trying to be as transparent and accurate as we can. There's been a growth of value in home prices over the last year. So we're showing not only that the tax rate's going down, as it is, but also the value of homes is going up. So when you bring both of those elements into the equation, an average home is going to see an increase of $13.62. Now, it could be that my assessment doesn't go up at all next year. In that case, it's a lower tax rate. My taxes are going to go down. But there is a fair amount of appreciation in home values right now. Assessments are going up. We've tried to capture that in the way we estimate the impact on a median valued home, and that's $13.62.
And for the people at home, the key thing is the levy increase, and that's what affects what bill you pay. The tax rate, if anyone says to you, oh, the tax rate's going down, you're going to pay less money, all you really need to do is look at last year's bill and this year's bill, and you'll find out whatever that number is. So it's the levy that has the most impact on how much property tax you pay.
Okay, and can I ask a couple of other questions?
Okay, a couple other people are in line, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll wait if you'll come back around.
Martha, then Leslin.
Well, often we include what the actual tax rate is. And by the way, Jim, so this, what you're, Jim's holding up, this is the comparison between what we pat, what the amendments result in compared to the administrator's offered budget. So, and the resolution talks about comparing this new budget to last year. So that's kind of one of the sources of confusion. But often we'll actually say what the resulting tax rate is, and I think that's kind of useful. So could we – I'm looking at the first resolved, and it says the end of it, of that paragraph, it says, and a countywide average tax rate, I'd like to say, of $6.73 per thousand, comma, a decrease of 1.77%.
Apparently, I have a different resolution than you all have in the packet.
I'd like to second that.
I'd like to third it.
Yours is.
All right, we have a. Let Jim take a look at it. Then we'll ask for the amendment. Or maybe it'll be friendly.
Yeah, I mean, whatever makes this work, okay? I'm fine with, but I don't. Where are you coming up with that number, Martha? That you're saying.
The sheet that we got.
No, that's the sheet budget. That I have.
Amended. So this one, the bold column says amended budget, $46 million. The next number, tax rate, $6.73.
Right.
Is that right, Joe?
Yep. I have that.
Okay. So that's the resulting tax rate that we're proposing. And that's what we're calling for a public hearing on that.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, is that friendly to you? Can you restate so that he knows what we're asking?
So it's a resulting in an approximate tax levy increase of 1.12%.
All right.
And a countywide average tax rate of $6.73 per $1,000, comma, a decrease of 1.77%.
Apparently, that's in your resolution. It's not in the one I'm looking at. It says tax rate decrease, and, you know, yes, it's friendly. That's fine.
Thanks.
Glenn, is it friendly to you, a seconder? That's friendly. All right, so that's been accepted. I think we have Leslin next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What Martha brought up is what I really wanted to bring up, but I also wanted to say a great big thank you to Joe for that explanation again. Every year, because we have a number of new homeowners and people don't understand it. Jim, I hear what you're saying. We often tell people look at the tax levy, but people talk about their tax rate, and that's extremely important for people to understand. So if you have a wonderful Cliff Notes version write-up of what you just said, it would be extremely helpful for all of us, at least for me to have it, so that I am able to explain better to folks what this means. So that would be great. So thank you for giving that explanation.
Anyone else? Are we ready to vote? Carol.
So I just want to say something about the budget and the process from here. You know, it's interesting that in some years we've gotten a lot of people come to us at this meeting from various constituencies asking us to add or subtract different things from the budget. And we didn't, we obviously didn't this year so far. There still are some opportunities. People can come to our budget hearing on, Jim, you can fill in the date, and then our final budget vote on
10th and the 17th. The 10th. Public hearing is the 10th. The vote is on the 17th.
Yes. Okay, but it is interesting, and while, you know, we have gone through a very intensive process, and I really respect my peers, and we've grappled, we've added some things, and we've taken out a few. There are still some things that I wish we could do, which I'm not going to propose. I would love to see us get back to having another librarian. I would have loved, we're going to hear about an incredibly informative program tonight that looks at homeless youth and in our community and what do they think are the things that could impact their lives the most. There's probably more we could do there. There are roads and bridges that we wish we could do more on. And stream corridor. We hear about the horrible storms and being able to solidify our stream corridors so that our roads don't wash out to begin with would be. I mean, the list could be endless, but I think we've grappled with and come to a good budget. And unless any of my colleagues, if any of my colleagues were going to see fit to want to revisit any of those, or if we hear loudly from constituents, we, you know, there are things we'll still revisit. But I think we went through a good process, and I thank our esteemed Chair Jim Dennis for leading us through it.
Jim?
Kathy, November 10th is the public hearing, and we will be voting on the document on
November 17th.
November 17th. Thank you.
Well, we hope we get a good turnout of folks that come to speak about the budget. So can we move to a vote? Dooley's hand is up, then Martha again.
Have a roll call vote, please.
I think that this budget is an improvement over what the county administrator brought us, through not through any shortcomings of his, but because of the deliberations that we went through. But I cannot support this budget for a number of reasons. I'm sure it will pass tonight, but I just wanted to say that in my view, it omits too many things that we can afford to do, but have chosen not to in order to keep the tax rate as low as it is, by taking money out of reserves and voting down other things, such as a librarian.
Martha?
I'm not going to relitigate everything here. I think we all would like something different, but this is a solid budget to send to the public, and then we'll have an opportunity to make changes based on what we hear from the public. I just want to say a note about putting the new rate in our resolutions, and I hope we can, maybe that can go in the boilerplate resolution from now on, because that's the way people kind of, they know what their assessment is, and so they can just do that math themselves, and, you know, so that's kind of, it's convenient if that's in the resolution. Thanks.
Jim, you need to speak again?
Martha, the resolution I'm looking at in front of me has a tax rate decrease of blank percent, and what I put in is 0.01, which I guess translates to $1.77. Or
no, the 0.01 is compared to Joe's proposed budget.
Right.
The rest of this paragraph is comparing to the 2015
okay.
budget, isn't it? So the 0.01 is not accurate compared to last year's budget.
Whatever.
Are you all right, Jim?
Yeah, I'm fine. The only comment I want to make about the county administrator is asked by the legislature to bring a budget forward. He did that September 1st. It was in the best form that it could possibly be based on the numbers we knew when he brought it forward. And for any of us to say that the budget we have is better is not correct. It could be more expensive. We could have spent more money, which we probably are, but the county administrator budget was exactly what we asked him to bring forward, and he brought it in at 1.3 under the cap of 1.8. And for anyone else to say, you know, oh, it's not exactly what I wanted, well, that's why you're all here. And then you're able to do the things you want to do. If I were the county administrator, I would take, you know, that would be a little bit of a stab at me. But I know Joe is bigger than I am, and he's been here and listened to this for many years.
Okay, let's,
but I find it annoying.
Let's take Peter's comment, and then let's vote.
I'm going to bring you all some boxing gloves.
Yeah. You know, we're experts in this thing, and yet we get mixed up about the difference between the levy and the rate,
yes,
and so on and so forth, and how they interact with each other. And it's really hard for people who don't do this to understand what it all means. But I think we have to put those two things in there. But the thing I don't think we have to put in there is how it compares to what the county administrator said. I can't believe that anyone's interest, other than the county administrator, is interested in that particular fact. So I think putting yet another number on there may, in fact, confuse people. So I would suggest that we consider taking it off.
We didn't put it in there.
Oh, I thought
nobody put nothing in there.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought
we
it
just
was.
Just put the new tax rate.
All right.
Let's proceed to a vote. The clerk will call the roll, please.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No, and I'd like my reasons in the minutes, please.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
10 ayes, 2 noes.
The resolution is agreed to. Thank you. And thanks to all of you for the work in the expanded budget committee. Okay, we're going to suspend for a couple of minutes to drop the screens and get set up for the presentation. We're going to call on Amy Hedricks to do the independent living survey presentation.
Thank you. Yes.
More sales tax, huh?
Thank you. I know.
Amy Hendricks is the director of youth services for our county, and she's brought some folks with her that I'll let her introduce them, and then please proceed with your presentation.
All right. So as you guys know, we have been conducting the independent living survey, as you can see on the projector, for 4 years now, and it's a project between the Learning Web, Cornell University, youth researchers, and the Tompkins County Youth Services Department. So as part of your packets is the independent living survey, and I will turn it over to Dale Schumacher, who will provide you some more information, and then Jane Powers from Cornell will also be helping us with this presentation.
Well, good afternoon, good evening, whichever it is. Thank you so much again for inviting us and having us share some of the findings. I know that time is valuable to all of us, so we'll try to be relatively brief. You do have the whole packet, so you can review that at your leisure and then get in touch with us if you have further questions or inquiries. Let me start by introducing some others that are with us. Sally Schwartzbach is with us. She's the deputy or associate director at the Learning Web. She thought she just got a promotion. Also, we have Cody. We have several youth. We have Cody. We have Jacob. We have Rose and Mona Smiley, who is a case manager at our youth outreach program. As Amy said, this is a great, probably the greatest community collaboration I've ever been involved with in trying to come up with results. Okay. I had the wrong set of papers. Jane.
So I just want to say that it's actually the fourth time we're doing this. We began in 2003. So this is ILS 4, because we began in 2003, and we've been collecting data every 4 years. I wish I could tell you that things have just improved dramatically since 2003 when we first began this effort. And what's unique about this project is that it's not a bunch of researchers going into the community to study this issue, but it's about engaging the homeless youth as research partners who have, throughout the entire process, every time we've done this, been involved from developing the survey and the methodology to identifying the sample to collecting the data to helping us interpret the results and then present them to key stakeholders in the community like yourselves. Of course, the issue of housing is really critical to this whole project, and we haven't seen really fantastic progress here, although there has been some progress and increased housing for homeless youth since we began in 2003, but we have a very unstable housing situations for too many young people. You know, when we first started doing this project, people would say to me, we have homeless youth in Tompkins County? I mean, they were, like, shocked. And I was like, you know, the first time around, we had 165 youth that we identified in the sample. This time, how many years later? 12 years later? Mm-hmm. There were 208 young people that were identified that met the definition of being homeless. And this data was collected during the coldest time of the year in the winter months of February and March. So we have a very unstable population. A fourth of the younger homeless youth were able to stay in one place for the past year. But as this slide shows, most people were in multiple housing situations, anywhere from 1 to 19. We divide it between the younger homeless and the older homeless in this slide, and the younger homeless have a more instability. It kind of increases as time goes on. Another disturbing finding, which has also been pretty consistent, is that people don't feel safe. A third of the young people said they don't feel safe all of the time. That's not okay. Moving forward.
One of the other pieces that we look at is why are young people leaving home? Often we hear from a variety of stakeholders saying, the teenage years are a tumultuous time. Young people come in conflict. But the young people that we're talking with that are homeless are really talking about, yes, there was conflict at home, but there's something deeper. And here are a few quotes from those young people talking about things like family counseling, wanting to have that family counseling service, wanting to have parents get into recovery and do other things. So conflict is a big piece of this, but a lot of times it's much deeper than just having a rough time with your parents. Another piece is education. This is one that often the youth researchers, when we bring all the data back together, we have the young youth researchers look at the data and say, what does this tell us and what do we know? And they'll often say this question, they don't believe the answers of their peers. Because it's very hard sometimes to say, no, I didn't graduate high school, or I didn't actually get my GED. And so we have added in the prefer not to answer column, and this is where our statistics are on that.
And employment. I think you've heard often enough from other sources other than us that employment can be very difficult in Ithaca, and competition for even very low-level entry jobs, if you will, is extreme. From the survey, we found that 57% of the youth that were surveyed are unemployed. Many, if not most of them, have been looking for work and find it difficult. We also find that often the youth are unemployed because they don't have a lack of experience in terms of no resume, but they at times quite often actually have poor resumes. But think about this for a minute. If I don't know where I'm sleeping tonight, is it easy for me to get up and be on time tomorrow? If I'm not on time twice, I'm no longer employed. And the cycle goes on and on. So it's, you know, it's sometimes easy for us to sit here, me to sit here and say, oh, well, if they just show up on time, well, I'm not the one that doesn't know where I'm sleeping tonight. And I'm not the one that can't get up in the morning for a variety of reasons other than being irresponsible. Okay, thanks. And then we, of course, ask how many have taken advantage of the variety of assistance available in terms of supporting themselves. You know, certainly employment is difficult, and I'll let you, you can see the charts yourself, the variety of assistance and the percentages of youth that take advantage of those. Not all do, many do, and thank goodness they really need to. Interesting to me is that of those that are, especially on SNAP, the food stamp program, a large percentage run out of food stamp money before the end of the month, even if they're employed. So then they go without meals. This is an awful thing for me to say, I guess, because I don't mean it in a snide sort of manner, but it's really been a long time since I missed a meal because I couldn't afford it. I think that's true of most of us in this room, and yet in very honest, real terms, some of the youth that we deal with face that on a monthly, if not more often, on a monthly basis.
So another question we look at is system involvement over time. How have the young people been involved in different systems? We've seen that some of the systems have decreased and others have increased, depending on what's happening in the different services. And also, one of the things to know is because this survey is done with youth researchers, they reach out to their natural networks. So a lot of the times, you'll see some changes in that. If the youth researchers tend to have children, we may see more homeless youth with children because that's their natural network and they're connecting with other mothers. So that's one of the things that we continue to look at as some of these changes occur. And community safety. We ask the young people if they carry a weapon and if they know people that carry guns. And also how often they've been threatened or injured by a weapon. And a lot of this is their perception, especially on do you know people who carry a gun. You'll see that the people that carry weapons, there's a smaller percentage than those that know people who carry guns. And that could be perception. It could also be the reality of what they're facing. And they're being asked this face-to-face. So they may not feel comfortable telling the youth researcher that, you know, they're carrying a gun or a weapon while going through this interview.
And some good news here on the health behavior front is that more youth are insured through Medicaid. This year, 66% of the young people were on Medicaid. In 2011, the last time, it was 48% of them. But the vast majority are going to emergency rooms and convenient care when they get sick. A lot of them are also not going anywhere and treating themselves. When we were talking during, we have these great data dialogue sessions with the young people when we present the data and we get their take on it and help us interpret findings. And we were trying to sort of dig a little deeper here, like why don't you go to a provider if you're on Medicaid? And the research team, the young people told us that they have difficulties trying to find providers who accept Medicaid. The few providers accepting new patients do so for a very limited number of new patients a month. Transportation to providers is also a barrier. While Guthrie accepts Medicaid, it must be accessed by bus due to the location outside of the city. And as one research team member told us, quote, the bus does not run every hour, so if I have an appointment for 11 a.m., I might not be able to get back downtown until 5 p.m. If people have jobs or childcare that they need to be at, they can't go to the doctor. So these are some of the kinds of sacrifices and juggling that has to go on. Emotional support. We know that being connected is one of the most profound things that it affects the health and well-being of adolescents. And so when we ask them, like, who do you turn to for support in your life? Most of them turn to friends, friends who are similar to themselves in the same situations, or to no one. 56% said no one. I don't turn to anyone when I need support. This is also a concern. Substance use. Here, this graph shows you, compares 2015 with 2011. 2015 is the red bar. And here we see that use of marijuana, alcohol, and salvia is down. But tobacco, cocaine, heroin, molly, crack, speed, meth, morphine, bath salts, and special K use are up. And I think that we, when we also looked at these data with the young people, that these were probably... this is kind of the tip of the iceberg. They're much higher than what these numbers are actually saying. That was what we were getting feedback on. Current needs, this has been consistent across all of the times we've collected these data. Transportation is a big one. Housing for the older homeless, it's help with my education. For the younger homeless, someone to talk to. We just saw that on the previous slide. But help finding housing, a job, transportation, and education are paramount.
Which is pretty much what you would think, I imagine, from any young population in any area. These next several slides really do start to direct us, I think, as a community, towards seeking solutions. And there, in all of these, is a hint of a solution. You know, what are the biggest issues facing young people? And we always wonder how this is answered, because some of the youth will answer it with themselves in mind. Many of them will answer it as if they're a bit older and they're speaking about their brothers or sisters, the siblings, the younger population. But as you read, it's the issues that they're facing and the barriers that are in their way. And I think with some hope in the hearts of many of them, a sense that the adult community will help to pitch in and collaborate with them and find solutions. And what do you want people in power to know? We ask this every time we do this survey. Each time the results are the same and yet different, the same and yet worded differently perhaps. More support services. Or programs. It's sad when I see that a young person for emotional support has no one to go to. And a part of me says, oh, but think of all these services. I know. We need to find ways, the Learning Web also, we all need to find ways to have young people informed about where those services are. Where are those non-judgmental services that can help to direct and guide and support. I want to be given a chance. I want people to realize that I have potential. I want to be listened to. I don't want to be barked at and told I have to move out of the way. I want to be listened to. And often we heard this time in the survey the extent to which drug use and addiction are real, real problems. And I think the slide that Jane just went over in terms of the change from a little less use of marijuana and alcohol to a greater use of what we would refer to and think of as more harsh or stronger drugs is apparent, and it's been apparent in law enforcement over the last several years from all the stories and reports that we've had throughout Ithaca.
So one of the pieces to this is really looking at our runaway and homeless youth providers and what they're learning from the data and how they can shape their programs. And some of the things that we know that has happened is while the needs continue to increase, that funding has decreased at the state and federal level. There was a slight increase at the state level this year, but it wasn't significant. Locally, we've lost one of our federal grants, and actually one of our providers switched last year. At the county level, we've been able to stay pretty flat. We haven't had increases, but we're trying to continue to support that. The other thing that providers have learned is that the dreams and barriers faced by the young people are really the same as many adults. When we talk to the young people about what their dreams are, it's simple things like going to school, completing their education, owning a house someday, having a car, working a good job. Very common goals. And then another piece to this is we need to continue to address some of those systematic issues that Dale talked about, and the systemic issues, as well as those perceptions that youth have about the services and supports in our community. Working with youth researchers, we can often hear about their opinions and their beliefs about different services offered, reasons why some of them may not feel like they can go to the Department of Social Services and receive SNAP benefits or reach out to other providers in the community, the perceptions that are really there. And this final slide is some of the quotes that we've pulled from the youth that are surveyed. It's always interesting to see what different types of quotes we can pull and really learning from them about their experiences. And so that really pulls this all together. We do have some of the members of the youth research team here, as well as ourselves, if there were any brief questions.
And do look at the whole report, please, or go to it online. It's at our website, because there's a lot more information. Out of respect for your time, we tried to hit some of the more salient points as we saw it and then see it.
Thank you all. This has been very interesting. Do we have questions and comments? Martha?
Yeah, thanks very much. You came to our HHS committee in 2003 or four, and I mean, I feel like, okay, is it that time again? So thanks very much for sticking with this, and for doing this important work. I have a bunch of things, but I want to know if Cody, Jacob, or Rose, or Mona want to add anything.
What, do you have anything to add?
Actually,
please state your name for us, please.
Jacob Mirando. I just moved to Tompkins County about a month ago, and I've been homeless this whole time. I've had a job since I've moved here. I worked at Viva for about a week, but due to not having a place to stay and worrying about that, I wasn't able to, make it to work on time. I had a few car troubles. I had a couple accidents. So, I mean, I understand where everybody's coming from. I can attest to every slide in this program. Going back to the slide about do teens carry weapons? I carry two knives on me at all times, and it's not for my own personal protection. I grew up in the woods. I was New York born and bred. I've lived in the woods mainly my whole life. So coming to the city, it's a different. I feel out of place. I'm not used to the traffic. I'm not used to, everybody being around me all the time. And it goes back to my mental health as well. I have anxiety, so that, raises the anxiety along with being homeless and all that. So I just wanted to say, I wanted to comment on the Global Emissions Week. Solar panels, they are relatively cheap and easy to install. And coming from myself, I know that there is a huge workforce that is ready, willing, and able, including myself. I'm 24, and I already need a hip replacement because I've been doing manual labor since I was about 13, 14 years old. And, I receive Medicaid, but that's about it. I'm in the process of transferring my case from Orange County to up here, and I've been dealing with that for a month. I went to the Rescue Mission Shelter down on State Street, and because I have no place to go, they told me I had to go see DSS. DSS told me I had to cancel my case down in Orange County and open a new one. A lot of people don't understand that process takes months and months and months, and phone call after phone call, and meeting after meeting, and not having any transportation or money to, you know, take the bus or a cab. You know, it really, it's a struggle. Yes. Of course.
Mike, the microphone, please.
The personal question is basically, why did you come here? I mean, what drove you to say, you know what, I am going to move to Tompkins County, New York. I don't have a job. I don't have a house. I don't have a car, really, to live. I mean, something had to propel you.
I have a friend up here. I have one friend up here, and it's because of him that I'm up here. You know, I have, like I said, I have nothing. I have the clothes on my back and what I was able to bring with me, which I'm storing at his house. So
social connections are a good reason to move to Tompkins
yes.
County.
Yes, they are.
Thank you for speaking to us tonight.
Thank you, Jacob. And you know, no matter what, it's always the first month of moving to a new place is rough, so hang in there. But what you mentioned about DSS makes me wanna, there are a couple places where bureaucratic issues are raised. Now, there's not much we can do about, I mean, obviously, if we provide more funding for services, et cetera, then maybe education or drug counseling or family counseling are more available, et cetera. But there's some really big global issues that we're just, you know, legislators. But things like the DSS, for youth under 18, DSS regulations prohibit age 17 and under from admittance to the shelter.
Right.
So I don't know if that, I mean, some of these things, there might be state or federal regs or whatever, but any extent that we can do to make things more functional and logical, that means, in other words, an unaccompanied minor can't go to the shelter?
That's correct, and it does have to do with different regulations. One of the things that we've been able to start looking at and continue to look at with the continuum of care working with the different partners is other housing options. What housing options, who are we missing in this community with some of the housing options that we have available? So that's something that we continue to struggle with is finding that place. So right now, the unaccompanied minors is, and Dale and I'm sure Learning Web can speak to this, is very difficult to find them that place. We do have two runaway and homeless youth providers that offer different types of services. So the Family and Children's Program, the Open Doors Program, which is relatively new, is still pending on their host home application, so they'll have those host homes in the community. But that program's really about family reunification, whereas youth outreach is more about independent living, but does not have a youth shelter component to that.
Okay.
Some more that want to speak.
Yeah, and I heard recently about Section 8 being somebody who, a young person who got out of jail and had lived with his father in a Section 8 apartment, and because he now had a felony, he couldn't go back and live with his father because he couldn't live in a Section 8 house. What?
Yeah, I think if you want to talk about what can be done, all of us, of course, I think your voices are louder than mine because you are elected officials and respected at a higher level, which is important. We need to go to a state level and start to challenge some of the rules and regulations that are made. The system is broken, and I know it's not political, but I'll be non-political to even say. The system is broken in so many little ways, but for the lives of young people, it really adds up and affects them.
But if somebody could pull out specific concrete things we can tackle, and some of them they may not be local level, but even if we can, because Patricia Carey goes to these statewide meetings, and if we can put pressure to get some of these things changed, maybe that can help.
Yeah, and Patricia's not the issue.
Fair.
Way above that.
Right, but we need to know about these things. The other, just finally, 211 is a great service that we have, and it's easy. And I wonder if there's do we have a 211 app? I'm going to make myself sound dumb here, but if there's a way that, you know, kids can tell each other, hey, you know, like, go look on your phone and get this, you know, you can get to this resource. Let's see if we can use different kinds of technology.
Let's go to Carol. And then there was a hand over here. Was it Peter? Yeah, then Peter, or Carol, then Peter.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for coming. My sense is that with surveys like this in particular, the way in which you involve the youth themselves in designing it and running it, that in itself probably helps to keep our numbers down a little bit. Unfortunately, we still see them going up. But I'm interested in hearing who funds the survey, whether from all of you, whether you see key interventions that would make a difference that maybe we're not doing now. And Jane, in particular, I think you got short shrift on the introduction there. We're really fortunate to have you in our community. I don't remember your title. You can give it, but it's head of the entire New York State Centers of Excellence in Youth. No longer, but for years and years.
Remove that from the record. Yeah.
So my question for you is, in that capacity where you go around, whatever the title is, where you go around the state helping people who run programs to learn how to do it better, to intervene with youth, are there creative solutions that you see other places that we should be considering here? So for all of you, it's, you know, what are key things we could be doing, and you know, other things we're doing other places that we may not know about.
Yeah, I just want to say though that the approach that we've used here is pretty innovative, you know, just to bring. I mean, I've been studying adolescence for 30 plus years, and when I've gone places and talked about, you know, we should engage adolescents as research partners. People are like, whoa, why would we want to do that? And it's been really transformative to work with young people in developing tools and methods and data collection. And they've been awesome and have really the ideas about what kind of information to collect. I think we should draw upon the resources that these young people bring to us more. And I think that's one of the strengths of this effort. And another thing is that these findings have really been used and have made a difference in a lot of different ways, as much as been small progress. But bringing youth to the table, I would say, has been one of the real hallmarks of this effort. But this is a tough population to work with. I mean, statewide, I don't know anybody else doing, you know, great work around helping, you know, homeless youth.
Yeah, if I could add, bringing youth to the table, it's not an open invitation. It's open in the sense anyone can come, yet the youth have to participate honestly and actively. They have to be trained by us in terms of the tool and the document, that administration. They also have to take the human subjects training because they're going out and interviewing their colleagues, if you will. So, I mean, we take it very, very seriously. The youth involved actually embrace the whole process.
Mm-hmm. Peter?
Wait, and can I get the answer to who funds it? And
oh,
Amy
had the primary funder for this round was the Youth and Philanthropy Program of United Way.
We really do this on a shoestring.
Yeah, on a shoestring, and we often apply it to several different local funders.
Peter?
I found your talk and the slides intriguing. I don't personally have any connection in my life with homeless people or people who need this kind of help. But I do like numbers, and I was sort of watching them go by. And it occurs to me that the two fundamental things that you need is a place to sleep and a job. I mean, if you got a place to sleep and a job, then if you're not a sick or one way or another person, you ought to be able to survive. And with regard to the job, I was really, the number that caught my eyes the most was the number of people who had had a job, the percentage of people who had had a job during the past year. And I wonder what happens. I mean, it was like, I forget, 70%, 60%, something like that.
50%.
So, you know, there was a slide that said one, two, or three jobs or something like that. So are the jobs just sort of short-term jobs that go away, or do the people,
All right.
I'd like to understand why with all of those jobs,
right,
we have this problem.
Go ahead, Mona.
Come up here so I can hear you.
Mona's actually from the Youth Outreach Program. We'll speak to that.
Mona's the coach manager at Youth Outreach, so she knows better than any of us what.
I guess to answer your question.
Could you state your name for us, please?
Mona Lita Smiley.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I guess to answer your question as to why there are numerous jobs, I'm going to give you a really quick situation. I have a young woman that got into a place, had two jobs working, one Viva Taqueria, one at the mall. The bus doesn't run at 11 o'clock at night to get her home to Hanshaw Road, so she lost her job at Viva Taqueria. So that's the situations that we see, is that these young people are getting jobs where they may have to work till 10, 11 o'clock at night. It's a minimum wage job. They have to have more than one so they can cover their expenses, or at least attempt to cover their expenses. But that transportation is a huge issue. If you don't have your own transportation, you're not going to be able to make it to your shifts. Therefore, you're going to lose your job. If you find housing downtown, you're not going to find housing downtown. It's too expensive on a minimum wage salary. Exactly. So you have to go to the outskirts of town in order to find something that's affordable, but you got to have two or three jobs to do it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and she walked. She works at the mall till she gets out of work at 9 at the mall some nights. She lives on Hanshaw Road. There's no bus, so she walked. She walks from the mall, young female, 9:30 by the time she gets done shutting things down, and she walks to the trailer park. Close to 9, but they service Cornell and IC till 10 or 11, but she doesn't live there. She lives on Hanshaw because that's what DSS said she could afford based on a pay stub that they received from her with her application. So now when she gets out of work at 9, she walks. She can ask to not be scheduled until 9 o'clock, but then that reduces her hours, which means she can't afford to make her rent if she doesn't have her hours.
And rarely do any of them take 40
hours. Yeah, they're all part-time. That's another thing. There's no 40-hour minimum wage job that they're going to be able to have.
So.
Fast food, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's. They're downtown. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Jim had his hand up next, and then we need to kind of move on.
That was the question I was going to ask. I realize what kind of jobs there are. Are there enough jobs? Peter says a place to live and jobs. I'm also adding transportation into that. But are there enough jobs around for people if they could get to the jobs or no?
So one of the things is we do have that low unemployment rate. So what we're finding is these young people are competing for a lot of the same jobs that people with college degrees have. And we're talking about some have, high school diplomas, some have GEDs, some don't have either. When we talk to them, there's not enough jobs that they can maintain and the hours they can maintain. What Mona just spoke about, getting the transportation, being on time, and finding employers that will work with them. So one of the youth researchers, when we were going through this, said he had just started a job and he couldn't believe when he told his owner she had scheduled him, and he said, "I can't get here," and she didn't fire him. And he said that was the first time that's really happened, where she realized, oh, there's no way for you to arrive at this time, and was willing to be flexible. So I think that's the piece, is there's a lack of opportunities that are readily available for these young people to get into.
I remember a part-time job, 20 hours a week at $8.75, is not enough money to afford any apartment and then get there. And so now they're working two jobs. So if there are enough jobs, there have to be double the jobs. Everybody has to have two. It's...
Let me just Something say wrong. Thank you for coming. A compelling story, at the very least.
Carol, real short.
Oh, real short. I'm getting this image of a big brother, big sister, gadabout program where you match up young adults or adults with, or retired people who still drive with kids who, have gotten jobs. It won't solve all these problems, obviously, but it's a thought I'll throw out.
Thank you all for coming tonight. I would add that this was very sobering, and I think you got our attention.
Thank you. How you doing?
We're going to suspend while we put the screens up.
All right.
come to go to church.
Thanks.
You're not allowed to.
I didn't look in the red folder. Someone said they don't click in the red folder, I would have had it.
Can we go back into session, folks?
Yeah.
For my report, I'll just mention that from the Regional Economic Development Council, we have now made the presentation, our representatives in Albany, of our plan for the what the press calls the Hunger Games, which means that it's a competition for the $500 million to three out of the seven regions that have been allowed to compete for this. We're anxious to see whether the Southern Tier region, to which we belong, receives the $500 million based on the presentation that was made. But it's moving along, and we should hear some announcements, hopefully relatively soon. I don't have any chair's appointments tonight. Let's go to reports, to start with our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. Fairly brief report tonight, mostly in the way of updating you on things that we've talked about in prior meetings. We are continuing to work with Schuyler County on a contractual relationship with their public defender's office, where our assigned counsel program would take conflict cases from Schuyler County. It's an excellent shared service. We're working on business terms right now. Julie Hughes and I think Jonathan has been involved in this, too. They're working on business terms. We'll soon put a pencil to the numbers. We want to make sure that we charge a fair amount. And so I think we're getting very close to a final understanding with Schuyler County on that shared service. I've posted you every meeting, too, on the courts task force, the TCOG Municipal Courts Task Force, because it's important. And there are some important conversations occurring within that group. Every 2 weeks, the group meets every 2 weeks. I've reported before that the first meeting with stakeholders included Judge Rowley, the New York Public Defenders Association, the head of it was there, Legal Assistance of Western New York. So that was session one. The second session were several town and village justices who spoke to the group, had a good back and forth with the task force. And then last week, the panelists were local defense attorneys. So through this conversation with stakeholders in the system, I think again, it's a really important conversation that's happening. Change could result from it. The next group of stakeholders will be law enforcement officials who interact with the criminal justice system from, again, a perspective that the task force hasn't heard from yet. Stakeholder interviews will continue through probably the end of this year into early next year, and then the group will come back to deciding what its findings and recommendations are. But if you get a chance, it's worthwhile to stop in and listen in. I think you'd find it pretty interesting. It's also the audio recordings are on the webpage. So if you have nothing else to do and the baseball game is not great, it's available for you to listen to on our webpage as well. I wanted to update you on Energize New York. We are a member in good standing now. We're officially a member of Energize New York, and we are now beginning to work with the Chamber of Commerce, TCAD, and soon we will reach out to the builders and contractors in the community, the Landlords Association and others, for a major kickoff event. There's a little bit of knowledge out there about what we're doing with respect to providing low-interest, long-term financing that can be repaid through property tax bills. There's a little bit of knowledge. We'd like to kick it up several notches. Among the people who will be involved most directly in taking advantage of these programs, which are aimed at improvements that will conserve energy or bring renewable energy sources into commercial buildings, existing commercial buildings. So we're hopeful that within the next month that kickoff event will occur, and I will certainly keep you posted on that because we would like you to attend that event as well. Kind of on the negative side, I've posted you all on the government efficiency plan. The state did not accept ours. We thought it was a good plan, but we also thought it was a bit of a long shot when we submitted it. As you may recall, we had demonstrated savings that exceeded $1.7 million a year by taking advantage of some of the menu items, the programs, the opportunities that were made available through the Intermunicipal Consortium. We found it very difficult when we presented it to the state. In some cases, when we change benefit plans, we have to negotiate those things, and we should. That's the way it works. So if we're going to change a benefit plan to, for example, have new employees enroll in the Platinum plan as opposed to the current plan, we have to negotiate that. Again, we should. When the state looked at the savings associated with some of the things that we had to negotiate, they wanted to know, did you negotiate anything else in that same contract period? And we did. We negotiated some wage growth. And so the state said, well, you have to deduct that wage growth from those savings. And so we went back and forth on that. We tried to make the case that if wage growth was not excessive relative to objective standards like the CPI and what others had given their employees, the savings were real and should be counted fully. The state didn't agree. We took that approach, and we picked that savings, one, because they're real and meaningful, and second, as I put in the note to all of you, unlike a lot of other places in the states, the low-hanging fruit had already been picked in this community. We've been doing this stuff for a very long time. And things that you would see if you looked at the government efficiency plans in other counties and cities, you will see in the budget that you just advanced tonight, you will see in the everyday workings of this government and other local governments in Tompkins County, we've done a lot of the things that are considered innovative now. So those weren't available to us. So as a result of the state's opinion, first of all, we're not going to let it die yet. We're going to go back to the state and try to reason with the state about why they should accept this. If they don't, then it means that the rebate checks that would otherwise be available to homeowners for the growth in their tax bills in 2016 won't be available. That's the consequence of not being able to have this plan accepted. So even though we would stay within our cap, there would not be a rebate of that $13 or whatever that number was, $13.62, from the state this year. And because we were a part of a countywide plan, that affects other towns and villages in the city as well. So it was, I think, a good effort. I think we did everything we could. It was not successful, at least at this point. Frankly, I'm not sure what else we could have done to make our case, but it didn't end quite the way we had hoped. So that's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Questions? Dooley?
Excuse me. Based on Carol Booth's speaking earlier, is there any forward motion on seeking a deputy commissioner for mental health?
Yeah, in fact, after the Human Services meeting a week or two ago, I directed the personnel office to begin the process of recruiting and selecting a deputy commissioner of mental health. So it's underway. We're working on marketing the marketing piece right now, but in terms of the kickoff, it has been kicked off. So we are we're in that process. Yes,
Martha.
That's good to hear. I appreciate that. That was another one of the comments I meant to make while Carol was here. On the, you know, the government efficiency plan, I know there was a news article saying, you know, most of them got approved and three counties didn't. Is there going to be a list anywhere available of what other places did?
I'm sure there will be. I haven't seen it. The only thing I saw, in fact, when we got the news was I saw a list of those whose plans had been accepted. That's all that we saw. In fact, we were never notified by the states of the status of our plan. We had to deduce it. I'm sure at some point, because they're now beginning to quantify the savings associated with these plans, I'm sure we'll be able to get a list of what others have done.
Well, that'd be interesting. But I think also we should note that they approved all but three counties in the state. I'm guessing somebody told them they couldn't approve them all, because then it wouldn't look like they'd been hard enough on counties. You know, I'm just feeling like you probably, they had picked somebody to turn down.
Jim Dennis.
Martha, what were the other two counties?
Cortland and Delaware? I can't remember.
What's interesting is Cortland, the city, originally was not approved. Their savings was they joined our consortium, and they joined it after the look-back period had started. And they were denied, but through email exchanges, because the state still isn't dealing in person, they were able to convince the state that indeed they were realizing significant savings by joining our consortium, so they got their designation.
I repeat, they have somebody to deny.
Jim?
And why not Tompkins?
Did you have something to say?
No. I wanted to know what the other two counties were.
Gotcha.
And,
Joe, thank you for bringing up about the Municipal Court Task Force. And I wish I could get to every meeting I've been to, at least one of them. This is something like I have never seen before. The quality of this investigation and information gathering by this group is something that each of you ought to take some time and look at. It's innovative. They're doing their best to be fair and to try to get all the different players in here to talk about the local court system and should there be changes to it. 4 or 5 years ago, there was a state commission that came and held hearings on this very issue in Tompkins County. Nothing came of it, but I was one of the people that offered some points and testified to that. This room works very well for this kind of hearings. I will say hearings. The TCOG group really moving this forward is to be commended. And I think there's an opportunity here for some real, I'll use the word innovation, or change or betterment of a system that has been under scrutiny, but yet folks have really not moved forward here. So please pay attention to this and look at it, because in the future we may be asked to take some kind of action here. And as I said, TCOG is to be commended. Joe, your leadership there is to be commended as well. Lesson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually wanted to ask you about exactly that. And we're trying to figure out what was the impetus for beginning this.
It really grew out of the state challenging us to look for shared services. Okay. And so the shared service group of TCOG got together and listed the things that might lend themselves to realignment, and this was one on their list.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's move on to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
No long report. I did want to mention a couple of things. Kathy Covert tells me that the GO agenda is coming out tomorrow, which will have the drone law. So people should feel free to distribute it to interested constituents at that point. A few of you have asked me about that. And I'm sure you do have some interested constituents. Secondly, just to respond to the question to Joe that was just asked. Interestingly, on the mental health, the deputy mental health commissioner under the charter is an appointment of the mental health commissioner. So that will make that at least interesting when it comes to that. So I have no further report.
Thanks for that enlightenment. We'll figure it out. We'll go to Rick Snyder, who's our director of finance.
I want to bring your attention to the sales tax report that I passed out a little while
ago while we were taking a short break, and I wanted to let you know we just received these yesterday, and I hadn't had a chance to calculate anything until this afternoon, so that's why I was a little late for our meeting this evening. But I did want to apologize at the onset to Mrs. Chalk, who had asked for graphs to be brought back at the next time so that we could look at the percentage increase or decrease for each quarter, and I hadn't had a chance to do that. I thought it was more important to give you the information for a number of reasons. First, we've just tentatively passed a budget, and I commend the legislators for working strong and hard together on that. I think you've come up with a very good budget for next year, and I've been on the periphery working with Joe and Kevin on putting that together. And some of the calculations and some of the prognostications that we do looking forward change over time. The sales tax forecast that Joe has put together in the budget really hasn't changed that much in the last couple of months, but I thought I'd bring you the latest data. Just 2 weeks ago, I shared with you August data. Tonight, I'm going to share with you the data for the end of September, or what I rolled together into the third quarter. So if you look at the sales tax distribution summary, you'll see in the third quarter for the county, which is the second section there about midway down, it shows that as a percent change, the quarterly increase was 1.68% for the third quarter for our county. And if you remember, the first two quarters as we've gone through this fiscal year were negative growth. We've had some pretty sad months during the beginning 3 or 4 months of the year. So our third quarter has ended fairly robust at a 1.68% increase. If you move over on that same line, that county section, to the dollar amounts, it shows that as of the end of September, our year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion total $24,699,430, and that compares to $24,980,511 in 2014. So when we're looking at the data year-to-date, this represents a decrease of $281,081 year over year, which is a negative 1.13%. And although that's still a negative number, a little over 1% compared to last year as far as growth, I might remind you that just last month, or when we brought this to you 2 weeks ago, that number was 1.35%. And then 1 month before that, it was about 1.5%. So we keep cutting the deficit with each month of good growth, and we hope that this continues on during the months of October, November, and December. And if you flip over and look at the longer chart that's entitled Tompkins County Sales Tax Receipts, this is the historical quarterly report, like which I share with you at the end of each quarter. If you move all the way to the bottom, where it shows third period for 2015, it shows that the county's portion of sales tax for the third quarter was $8,788,893, and that compares to $8,643,713 in 2014, the year right above it. So that shows for this quarter an increase of 1.68%, and historically, this is the highest third quarter that the county has on record. So we're back into positive territory with if you just looked at the third quarter, this is the highest third quarter on record for us. So that's pretty good news for our sales tax going forward. Will we still make budget? That remains to be seen. Tune in next time when we bring you more astounding data.
Thanks, Rick. Jim's got his hand up.
Yeah, Rick, I was doing some third grade math, and we would need $9,300,000 to match up with $34,002,586. So we really have to, get another good quarter to match up with last year's money. But
that would be hard to do. I would say we're probably fall $250,000 short, but I'm sure Joe has a lot more sophisticated model that he's using as far as putting the budgeting together.
I'm glad to hear the third quarter was the biggest ever.
Peter.
So what happened in the first and second quarters? I mean, we were all crying then, and what?
Well, still across the state, and we received some information just this past week that there has been horrendous mishap throughout the state, mostly because of fuel prices. We're still mentioning that a lot of what we've seen has to do with fuel prices having dropped so much. And for those counties such as ours, where we receive a sizable component from energy and from fuel sales, that has hurt us some. And I saw some data come out this week earlier, and I think Joe received it too, and that it shows all the different counties across the state and which ones have been impacted very negatively, which ones haven't been impacted a few positively, and which of us that are somewhere in the middle. And most of it, they're aligning with the continued low cost of fuel. And that will continue into 2016.
Free now. but we came back up then.
But that's amazing for us. And we are kind of an outlier on that. There are not that many counties that have come back quite as robustly as we have in the third quarter.
Do you locally see more shopping?
Peter, you want to use the mic, please?
I'm sorry. It's hard to look and talk at the person at the same time. Do our local merchants find that there somehow was a big growth in the third quarter, or something that would cancel those low fuel prices?
I don't really have the detail to support it, although I do know that a lot of the growth during this particular quarter is on the tourism industry.
Ah, okay.
And a lot of it is based on that kind of income that comes to
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Arthur?
Yeah, I mean, it was a miserable winter. January, February, March, April, May. And you know, the Commons reopened this summer. I mean,
I'm just wondering.
Yeah. But it is interesting that with gas prices so low, it used to seem that there was a correspondence with consumer spending in other areas. If gas prices fell, other consumer spending went up. I don't know if savings are going up. I don't know what else is happening, but we're not the only people, I think, scratching our heads.
Thanks for that report, Rick.
You're welcome.
Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Let's move to the consent agenda. There are no committee appointments tonight. Out of the Economic Development Committee, we have Resolution A, Designation of Tourism Promotion Agency for 2015-2016. That's ID 5866. We have Resolution B, Payment of 2015 Multi-Year Tourism Capital Grants. That's ID 5867. We have Resolution C, Acceptance of Farmers Market Promotion Program Grant from the United States Department of Agriculture's Agricultural Marketing Service for Agritourism Development, ID 5878. May I have a motion on the consent agenda? Carol Chalk, seconded by Leslie McBean, Claiborne. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Those opposed, we will take 10 minutes. We'll come back. And we will do the standing committee reports. Okay, let's get started again. Starting with our committee reports, let's go back to Jim Dennis for the budget committee.
Let me first say that I haven't been doing this long enough, and I wasn't using the red folder resolution, so you were all right and I was wrong. And It's wonderful that you're all right. And I told Ms. Covert to just whisper, dummy, look in the red folder, but she didn't do that. So at any rate, the budget
right
committee
along.
Meets what?
Moving right along.
Yeah, moving right along. Right. The budget committee meets next Monday, the 26th, at 4 p.m. and here. And your agendas are in your full in the mailboxes or on your desk. And we will start at 4. It's a full agenda. And the most important thing is we are looking at the performance evaluation for the direct reports. And I will be looking for some input on what we need to adjust those, change them in a way so that they're meaningful to the four people that work for us. And other than that, I don't have anything. Next Monday at 4, thank you all for attending 9 meetings on the budget, the 3 voting, the 6 presentations. We are where we are in November 10th, and then the vote in the 17th of November, and hopefully we'll be through the 2016 budget process. And if that all works, we'll have to take away our resolution where we gave ourselves the ability to go over the cap. We'll have to rescind that resolution at some point in November or December so that we fall in the good graces of New York State. And that concludes my report.
Jim, I know from the part of your committee is personnel, obviously, and I know you've been looking at the evaluations of the direct reports to the legislature. Could you tell us where we are with that?
We're gonna look at the committee for the first time. We'll look at the 4 different evaluation instruments that we pulled together and make some changes and then begin the process, you know, hopefully in November sometime. Put out the first one. We're not going to do all 4 at once, but we have to roll the dice and see who we're going to do first. But hopefully we can get that done by the end of the
year. Can you remind us, the folks at home, who those 4 direct reports are?
I'm sorry?
Can you, for the folks at home, can you say?
Oh, please raise your hand, the 4 direct reports. They're right over there.
That's our county legislative clerk,
four people right there.
The county administrator,
the county attorney, the director of finance, and Kathy Covert, the clerk of the legislature.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Dooley.
Dooley, you have a question?
Yeah. When you said the 4 instruments, are you using 4 different evaluation instruments?
Yeah, we are.
For each of the
yes.
individuals?
Yes, because the things that I've researched and Kathy and I and others have looked at are more specifically designed for the job rather than just a random thing to evaluate 4 people. We're trying to look at the job the person is supposed to do and deal with it in that fashion.
So do you have a way of getting input from any other legislators?
We will, yeah.
Thank you.
Martha?
I just want to say thanks to you, Jim, for leading us through those 9 meetings. And Kevin went home.
We're not done yet, so
no, don't
say that.
But Kevin and Joe, really terrific job on getting us information quickly and making difficult choices as easy as possible. And, of course, thanks to the department heads and the rest of the staff. So, Jim, good job. Another one almost done.
Okay. Let's move on. The old library committee has not met. Public safety committee, Jim, you're back to you as vice chair. Acting chair.
Wait, can I ask a question on the old library committee?
Sure.
Do we have any idea where they stand in going?
Just that they're working
process?
On the city process is
do we know
reports
where,
we have.
At where they are in that process?
I can't tell you. We could ask that question.
Good to know.
Jim? Public safety?
Oh, sorry. Public safety. We had a meeting yesterday afternoon, and I think, moved ahead with that you will get a chance to vote on in November at the first meeting, a very important piece of legislation for the county. We are authorizing, we will be moving and authorizing the joint development of grant application and request for a proposal to study the consolidation of city and county law enforcement agencies. And what we're really doing is November, you will vote on applying for a grant from New York State to get some money to do a feasibility study at a later point. And at the same time, it's hope that we can develop an RFP in-house with the city to submit when we get our money, or at least when they begin to tell us that we're going to get money, and then put together our RFP and send it out to hire someone to do the feasibility study. I think it's probably, in my time as being elected in Tompkins County, I know we've talked about it, I've talked about it, others, there are thousands and thousands of words talked about unification. And this is the first time I've seen anyone, the city and the county, the mayor and Mike Lane, put together this sort of thing and try to get it done. And the interesting part for me is that a young reporter from Channel 9 came down here today and said, well, how much money do you think you're going to save? I said, I have no idea if we will save any money, but what we were trying to do is look for an efficient way to add policing in a unified way between the city and the county in the county. And how long will that take? I came up with a number 3 years, and I think I'm being, you know, a little optimistic on that. But if we're going to do it, we have to do it the right way, and we have a possibility of getting a good result if we do it the right way. So we move that on. Any other item? Brian was here for a few minutes or half an hour, talked a little bit about the cameras. It appears as if the city will be getting their cameras before us, which actually is a good idea, at least the way Brian said, because the tech features on the camera we were looking at for our officers has been changed. As you know, as quickly as an iPhone changes, the tech capabilities of body cams also change. So we haven't bought ours yet. So I'm thinking that we will probably do that early part of next year, I think, that Brian talked about. Sheriff was not here, and there was some short discussion about board out costs and graphs and numbers, but those are all things we'd asked for last month.
Questions? Dooley?
Yeah. This idea of applying for a grant, I learned about it from the media, which felt funny to me because usually these kinds of things would be discussed at the legislature level before it's publicized. But the idea was obviously publicized before it came to any committees or anything else. And I'd find that uncomfortable.
Well, and may I interrupt?
No, I'm not finished.
Okay.
The other comment I had was that the timing seems, well, maybe it's good for the city and the county, I don't know, but the Charter Committee hasn't finished its discussion of possible charter changes. And one of the things that came up 10 years ago was the possibility of having a professional public safety department at the county level. And similarly with the county clerk, we've talked about those things, and I think that's going to be part of the Charter Committee's discussion this year. And applying for this grant seems to possibly foreclose that discussion. So those are my reactions. I just wanted to share them.
Let me just say, you are aware of the letter that was written to all of us, the elected officials, by the mayor and Mike?
Only after I heard about it publicly, yes.
I believe it was online also.
Can I say that That's prior to it being fault. Released, I sent an email to all legislators explaining what was going ahead, or asking that I would like to go ahead with it, and asking if there was objection, and I didn't receive any negative comments.
And I don't know it came through the Public Safety Committee, which is a legislature committee, so I don't really understand that comment. But, I don't believe it's going to preclude anything that you talked about in terms of charter or any of that. Can someone help me out with that? I mean, I don't...
If it affects the charter,
right,
we can always amend the charter.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the nice thing about our charter process is we have the right, the ability to amend it all during the process, not only every 10 years, but as we go along. Martha.
I remember that email, and I wrote, I can't remember if I wrote back to everybody or just back to you, that I was, you know, it was about time. And, you know, we had, Dooley, actually, you and I were chair and vice chair for 2 years, and I know we talked about it back that far back. That would be 2010. My sense is, I mean, there have been conversations going on for a long time. My sense is that actually I think we have a professional department. The question of a professionally hired as opposed to elected top law enforcement official.
Having a job description, yes.
The point is not elected is the critical piece. That is something that is certainly on the table when you're talking about a consolidated law enforcement operation. That is one of the kind of changes that, in fact, I think the sheriff commented on in the media, and that's one of the models that's very common. So it not only doesn't preclude what we want to do, it might actually make it more possible to do what we were thinking of doing a few years back.
Leslie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Although my angst isn't where Dooley's is, I happened to be in a meeting yesterday with a relatively sizable group of people. And one of the comments that came out about this is, when you hear about a study, there's already almost a decision that has been made, and people were concerned. I'm talking public, being concerned about this. Now, I don't sit on public safety anymore. I did see your email, Mike. I did see the letter. And it's unfortunate that we have, you know, sort of the benefit of having a little discussion here on the legislature floor about it as something that's coming out of public safety as a proposal before it moved forward. Partly because I think the public's perception, or at least the ones I've dealt with, perception is that this is a done deal, is when you're going to, you know, go ahead and do studies. It means that somebody's already made up their mind that this is something that should be done. Perhaps we need to make sure that our public is well aware of what it is we're doing and how we're going about this and why we're doing it, more than just the email that went to us.
Well, Leslie, let me just say it's not a done deal. It's a proposal to get grant money to do a study, an honest study.
I appreciate that, Mike, but let me also just say that there's a public out there who has seen these things happen before that are already done deals because minds had already been made up. That's why we are going for the money. So I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to have it on record, and hopefully some of those very public people are watching that it isn't. We're just trying to get information.
I think Dooley was next, then Carol, then Jim.
The third thing I wanted to say was that we have a number of other police departments in our county, and it isn't clear to me that they're included in this, because it was just the city. And I think that my village police are important to our village, and that's true of other villages. So I wasn't sure whether you intended to fold them into this study or not.
From my standpoint, and it was discussed, that we will be sending out an invitation to the other agencies if they would like to be a part of it. I think they would be welcome.
So I'm just curious, for those who think that more should be done, that there are steps we might have taken before voting on or handing in a RFP or a grant proposal, what are the steps that you think we ought to take? And are those things...
Are you asking me?
No, I'm asking, I think, Leslin, and maybe Dooley, but certainly Leslin.
Oh, okay.
If you were going to see us engage in some steps before we make the decision, what are those steps? Are there public meetings you'd hold? Or can you elaborate on what are some of the steps you think you ought to be taking before?
I haven't talked about any steps except making sure that our public knows what it is we're doing and why we're doing it. And however we decide to do that, it might be an article in the paper, it might be a meeting held, it might be something or the other. All I'm saying is just make sure that the public who is suspicious, I mean, public is already very suspicious about anything we do when it comes to law enforcement, and it's heightened, so let's just please make sure that they're clear about what it is we're doing and why we're doing it. That's all. And that it's not a done deal. So that can take any form, and I will leave that up to the Public Safety Committee or the chair and the mayor who have written this letter. And whoever is going after the grant, I don't know who is the lead agency going after the grant, to make sure that there is information to the public on it.
So can I just follow up? Sorry. I mean, I asked that not as – oh, is that a yes or a no?
Yes, and then Jim.
Okay. So, I asked that as a really a friendly question because I think, when we've done some controversial things, taken up some controversial matters – we have engaged in a process where we've made sure that all stakeholders get to weigh in and have ample opportunity. I'm thinking of the road use law and the, SAFE Act as we debated that. I mean, so there may be steps that we should take and that we could take even between now and when what came out of committee is coming to the legislature to just make sure that we get press and get input. Or, I don't know if people, if you have a sense that we should be holding other public meetings before we vote on this, I'm open to hearing what that process would be.
Jim, then Peter.
Leslin, my question for you is, or no, it's not a question. I think what you can do for us and the public you speak to, let them know positively that this legislature, if they approve this, is applying for some money from Andrew Cuomo's $150 million fund to study the unification of two law enforcement agencies. It is not, when you said it was a done deal, what did you mean by that? That we think that it's going to be unified or that we're going to do an application?
That they think that this is already in motion to make the unification happen. There are a lot of questions, and Jim, let me assure you that I did do exactly what you're saying, but you have people out there who have seen over and over again when a study has turned into a decision has already been made, and that's why I'm bringing it and asking. I just happened to be in this meeting yesterday. It's interesting it came up because folks were talking about it being on the Common Council agenda for tomorrow,
right.
And talking about people are talking about they should go and really speak to it because there were concerns about what does it mean. And I was trying to explain to folks that I don't even know what it means. It's a study to figure out what would it look like, what would it mean, where is it possible, should we do it, should we not do it, has it worked other places? I tried to explain all of that, exactly what you're talking about, but again, a lot of these folks are folks who've seen studies turn into things that are already done. One person's comment, interesting enough, was be wary of the studies because often political folks, politicians, stack who's going to conduct the study. And often they bring in the person to conduct the study who is in favor of this thing, and so the results are skewed. That was a comment that came out. So, again, my point is maybe it's the letter that you all wrote that gets published so that the public knows what it is and why it is. That's it. I've been in this legislature long enough, and I've known just about every budget hearing we've had, people have stood up and asked, you know, for consolidating. Maybe one way when we were in bad times would be to consolidate police services. People have said that over and over again. I've heard it. And it's something that I've thought about. When I chaired public safety, we talked about it. So you're right, Martha. We've been talking about it. We're taking a step further, and you have a public that's concerned.
Okay. Jim, you still have the floor.
Yeah, I do. And
your question.
I can, a couple of things. You have to start somewhere. And this is where we're starting. We see the opportunity to not use local taxpayer money to look at a very important issue. You know, if you read the letter, you will see some of the things in there. I can assure everyone, as one legislator, a former council member, that it is not a done deal. I'm not sitting around here thinking by any stretch that, oh, we're going to get a study and we're going to be able to move right into unification. Because I've observed this in other places. I've looked at it around the country. And I don't know that there's an issue that brings more noise and more fire to a group of meetings than trying to unify law enforcement people. And I think we have to be very careful about what we do, but we have to begin, and we have to get some money to do that and then hire a consultant. I don't think it's going to be a simple process even hiring a consultant. There will be a good deal of noise about that. And I think anybody here has to understand and has to realize if we're going to get involved in talking about these things, that it gets emotional, and you have to be aware of that. That's all there is. And I think we should do it.
I think Peter was next, then Carol, and then Martha, and then let's move on to another committee.
Well, listening to what both people have said, this is really complicated. It's not simple to put these two organizations together. I think it's very complicated. I think it's so complicated it won't work in the end. But nonetheless, I think it's a good idea, and we ought to do it. But one thing, what'd you say?
I said you're optimistic.
I'm not voting for this.
Go ahead.
Well, look, I'm telling you the truth. I mean, I've thought about this issue before, and I don't think it's going to work. But let it pass. It would be a better thing if we consolidated it. Be a better thing anyway. But I, in something like this, that where so much is so important to the two institutions, I would like to know what are the limitations that have been given to this person. It has to be this way. It has to do that way. It has to save money for both sides. Both sides have to have their own control or something like that. There are all kinds of parameters that go into it. And I would be very disappointed if there were already decided upon limitations to what's going to be done before
happened.
We vote on it. Okay.
None of that's happened.
Okay. Well, as long as we can be assured that those decisions won't be made without us having an input in it, that's fine with me.
Carol?
So at the committee, some of our discussion was, and the question that I asked was, is this one of those things that we were just by this resolution going to be authorizing staff to go ahead and submit, or is it something that would come back to the committee and the legislature once we had the proposal written? And the answer was yes, the intent was to bring it back. But in an attempt to, because I had this vague sense that there might be more discussion needed, And one constructive way that we might be able to get at some of this would be to add a further resolved to the resolution that's going to come to us at our next meeting, which could be, you know, it's past committee, but be it further resolved that we would hold some kind of a public input session before bringing the grant application back to the committee for approval for submission and then to the legislature, that there be some kind of a chance for the public, some publicity about it, and some chance for the public to say, hey, if you're going to ask for funds for a study, before you dismiss it out of hand, if there's going to be funds solicited for public study, that the public have a chance to say, hey, I think you ought to make sure to put this question on the list of things that you're going to propose to study, or that you know, here's an aspect of it you might not have thought of to add to the study, and it might cost
Carol,
a lot of money to do that.
You're a little far down the road yet. We don't have a resolution in front of us yet.
Well, we don't, but I guess I'm asking somebody to come back. It's going to come back to us at our next meeting because it came out of committee without such a clause.
Well, you've given us a head up.
And that,
we'll do that.
I would ask maybe Joe if you could think of a way to achieve what I'm trying to do. I'm not sure that I have the right wording.
Martha, then Leslin.
So there was a resolution at yesterday's Public Safety Committee meeting, and I guess that'll come to the next legislature meeting. Right. So, and Joe, you said you and possibly Paula and Ari Levine at the city would probably work on this.
Yeah.
And is there a time frame? Is there a deadline for the money?
I don't think so, but I do know that the governor's money, the big money, is one-time money, and it probably expires at the end of the fiscal year, their fiscal year. So Secretary of State is out there really encouraging people to get applications in quickly.
So it might be first come, first serve, and if the money doesn't, if we take a long time to even get the application in, we might be less successful in getting the money. I just got to say, this isn't any of our first trip to the rodeo. Does anybody here really think we would do something like this without a bazillion hours of public comment and meetings and presentations and process? Jim just said it's, 3 years is like optimistic. I mean, we're going to talk about this a lot. We're going to ask for people a lot what their thoughts are. And I guarantee you that after 3 years of public comment and a decision is made and then we announce the whatever the result is, somebody is, at least one, maybe many, will say, what? I didn't hear about that. I mean, the city just rezoned the tree block. The developer put a design together that fit the zoning. And then everybody's like, what? How dare you do that? Well, that was what the zoning was all about. So I just hope we can allay anybody's fears that it's just not in our DNA to push through something like this without lots of process. It's just what we do. And I think it's, we want to get this into the governor into the state for the money. We want to get the money. It's there. Something we've been talking about for a long time and trying to figure out, okay, how do we do, what do we do? How do we do this? Now there's an opportunity that we don't have to pay for it. So everybody kind of trusts and, it'll be okay.
Leslin, then Mike Sigler for the last comment, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter demonstrated my point exactly. I'm trying not to be a broken record. But Peter just demonstrated my point. I sat in the meeting. All the questions Peter was just asking were the same thing. I'm saying, we're not there, people. We're not there. So if I have not made myself clear, let me say it one more time. All I'm asking for is for us to let the public know what it is we're doing. We're going after the money from the governor, whatever, before the time runs out, and why we're doing it. Something just got said on the floor that also just reminded me, like, well, we're going to consolidate these two departments. That's not what I understood. We are going to study whether we should have one law enforcement department. We're not consolidating anything. So that's my point. Just make sure people know. I am not saying we don't do this and we don't let people know and we don't all of this. I'm saying there are people out there, because of what's been going on in our community, in our country, who have concerns, and we just need to allay their fears, like Jim just did. Nothing is going forward except getting some money and studying. That's it. However we do it, that's all I'm asking for.
Mike, last comment.
My two questions are quick. Is there a reason that it's the city police force and not like some of the smaller ones that would be easier? Or was that already answered and I'm just kind of out of it?
Yeah, the point is that we want others to join in this if they would like to. But we thought the two biggest ones ought to start it by talking about getting this study. And if we can get the village PDs and or the Cornell police to want to join in this study with it, I think that would be a tremendous thing to have happen.
Okay. And is this money only available for the consolidation of police departments, or is it any consolidations we want to do?
It's efficiency.
Not consolidate, whatever we're talking about. Yeah. Whatever.
No, there's other things.
Okay.
And it's $150 million, and they apparently want to give it away. So
I was just thinking water systems, sewer systems, stuff like that.
Oh, no, it's not. It's for studies. That this $150 million is
no,
for studies.
Study
it's
those.
Not, it's not for bricks and mortar.
No, but we can study those things. I mean,
okay. Thank you. Thank you, Jim, for your report. Let's move on to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
I'm sorry, I'm not done. No.
You're done. The Workforce Diversity Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Clairvoyant.
Y'all are bringing out the non-inclusion in me here these last couple of days. Anyhow, there is no report from the committee, but I want to, on this floor and on the record, publicly thank Lynette Chappelle Williams, who for many, many, many years have been the face of diversity and inclusion at Cornell University and within this community and beyond. Lynette is currently the, I think, Associate Vice President for Inclusion and Workplace Diversity at Cornell. In her role over the years, Lynette has worked very hard with others to transform some of Cornell's policies around diversity and inclusion and work-life family balance, helping Cornell to get a number of accolades for being a good place to work, a good employer when it comes to diversity and inclusion. Do they still have issues? Yes, like all of us, they do. But she's done a tremendous amount of work and also just receiving her own accolades for the work that she's done. We are losing great value, knowledge in this community with Lynette leaving us, resigning from Cornell. Hershey, Pennsylvania is very lucky to have her. I'm glad she's going to Hershey because goodness knows I'll be there often. I don't like chocolate, but I like the smell of it. So I do want to publicly thank Lynette. When we began the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Lynette was one of her staunch advisors. She's been a friend of mine and someone who has continued to offer support and guidance the work we're doing here at the county. She was very instrumental in helping the city put together its diversity plan, and she has over the years, like I said, been working with me and the WDIC as well. Not sitting on a committee. She was there during the first few meetings and then continued to offer advice. So, Lynette will be truly missed in this community. I'm sorry that she's leaving Cornell. She has to leave Cornell. But again, I just wanted to say thank you to her.
Thank you for that nice tribute. Questions for Leslie? Let's go to the Health and Human Services Committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
Yeah, we haven't met since the last time I reported, but we will be meeting at the usual on day, the first Thursday of the month, at 3:30.
Questions for Peter? Facilities and Infrastructure, Dave McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met just prior to this meeting this evening at 4:45 and discussed the resolution that was passed first up this evening for the mental health building. We also discussed some final payment resolutions and some Phase 3 Ellis Hollow Road resolutions, and also a resolution on the Pine Tree Road bike and pedestrian paths, all of which were passed and will be coming to this legislature sometime in the near future. That's my report.
Questions for Dave? Thank you, Dave. Go to Economic Development Committee. Martha Robertson is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. Committee hasn't met since the last legislature meeting. Our next meeting is Monday, November 2nd at 3:30 in the old jail.
Questions for Martha? Thank you, Martha. Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're meeting a week from today, Tuesday, October 27th at 3:30 here in this room. As our county attorney said, he's prepared a sample drone law for us, so we're going to be discussing that. Dave promises me we'll have a big crowd there. And then a couple of less exciting things that we'll be talking about. We're going to take a look at the blue cards again. So if you have any ideas about something you might like to see change on the blue card, please let me know or come to the meeting. And we're also going to be discussing the issue of whether legislators should be filling out application forms if they're on advisory, to be assigned to advisory committees and such. So if you have an opinion on that, either let me know in advance or show up. And that's my report.
Questions for Dan? Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
We're meeting tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 and have a very full agenda. Mostly it seems to deal with housing and energy. So apart from the committee, I wanted to report that yesterday the Water Resources Council adopted a new water quality strategy for the years 2016 to 2018. It has a number of action steps, and it's a good document. So I'm assuming it's up on the Planning Department website by now, and I suggest you all take a look at it.
Dooley, isn't your meeting at 3, I'm told?
Did I say the wrong time?
I think you said 3:30.
It's at 3, and it's scheduled to go to 5:15. That's right. Thank you.
Thanks. Questions for Dooley? Charter Review Committee. We met and we reviewed the county historian section. That's going to be reworked considerably. And we also reviewed the section having to do with the Stop DWI Coordination Department. We had a rather short meeting because we were short the number of people to vote after part of the meeting was over with. Questions I can answer. Thank you. Okay. Minutes of previous meeting, October 6, 2015. Jim, seconded by Martha. Discussion? Those in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Jim, are you opposed?
No.
Okay. One opposed. Dooley, you wanted to suggest something?
Yes. I wanted to request reconsideration of the minutes of Thursday, September 17th, which was a special meeting of the county legislature. At the prior meeting to tonight, I voted no because I hadn't even had a chance to look at them. Now that I've seen them, I would like to change, but I would like the opportunity to vote yes. So I'm asking for reconsideration of those minutes so I could change my vote.
Dooley's brought a motion to reconsider the meeting, the minutes of what date, please?
September 17th. It was a special meeting.
That was that real short meeting we had to set the elections.
Scheduling the elections.
Is there a second for a motion to reconsider? Seconded by Jim Dennis. On the motion to reconsider, those in favor of reconsidering this issue, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Now on the minutes again, would someone want to move them?
I'll move them.
Moved by Dooley Kiefer, seconded by Peter Stein. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? One opposed. That's Mike Sigler.
Well, thank you all.
Thank you. Any unfinished business?
Yes.
One thing I just wanted to remind, I'll get you just a second, but just let me remind people that our next meeting is not on Tuesday. It's on Thursday,
right.
And that's because of election. So don't forget and come here on Tuesday. Dan Klein.
That was my same unfinished business.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Perfect. Thank you.
Anything else? Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Moved by Leslie and seconded by Peter. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Thank you to Kathy Covert and Michelle Pothorf and
so 5 o'clock.
Everyone else. Marshall is here, and Mike and Jim up in the corner.